Thank you, Ryan. It is Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. And Bill, you have piqued mine and the listeners' curiosity.
All right. Neil Steinberg is here. Great, great writer. One of Chicago's finest.
Chicago Sun-Times since 1987.
Since 1987, oh, although you did take a week off, I remember.
I've taken, yeah, several times, a couple of months of rehab and that kind of thing, yeah.
All right, so I don't know if you'll remember this. Wendy doesn't, but I'm sure as soon as I refresh your memory, you will remember this. We had a debate, you and I had on the air about 22 or 23 years ago over the silliest thing
in
the world. Do you remember?
I don't remember it either.
This is what it is about. Now, keep in mind, Neil Steinberg is an adult and a writer, a fine, fine writer, and he's got better time for stuff like this, but I could do this all day long. The debate was about whether or not the comic strip Nancy has ever been funny one day.
I remember this. Yeah, of course. I wrote a column about Nancy.
I know
Nancy.
You did. This is what started it.
Ernie Bushmiller, the original artist of Nancy, it was my favorite strip.
Yes.
And I was telling Roper this, and Roper said, you explain that. You know, you tell your readers why you're a Nancy boy. And at first I thought I was
literally,
like, you know, kind of like handing someone a halter to hang themselves, right? I figured, oh, I'm not going to follow. Rich is trying to lead me over a cliff. I'm like, no. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And I did a column about it. It's on my blog.
You know,
and whose name I can't mention, sadly. But Bill
took issue with that.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to send you the link, Bill.
All right.
It's funny and it's also deeply weird. It's like when you open the American Heritage Dictionary under comic, there's a Nancy strip. And it's sort of funny. You know, it's a surreal sort of thing. And so I'm stand by Nancy. And how often is the chubby girl the star?
Never.
Okay, especially back then. So
right.
And she's got the whole Sluggo thing.
Right.
And, you know, it used to be her Aunt Fritz's strip. It was called Fritzy Ritz. And
right.
It was like those 1940s strips with the lounging in their peignoirs or however you say it.
I have no issue with Aunt Fritzy. I think Aunt Fritzy is as lovely a woman as you'll ever find. But Nancy and Sluggo always leave me disappointed. I can't wait to read it. And I've been disappointed 3,000
times.
There's
also personal, like, I never got Garfield, never for
no,
a second,
me
and people love it. So, you know, again, so I mean, that's why there's a whole bunch of cartoons in the newspapers that, you know, you only have to like a few.
Right.
BC rocked.
Yeah, so everyone has their weird...
PC. I'll take Ziggy all day long.
And
really?
Ohio. I grew up in his hometown.
Did you?
Tom Wilson.
Yeah, he's great.
He was the biggest star to come out of Berea, Ohio.
Ziggy needs to grow up here, if you want my opinion.
Yeah, Ziggy, see, that to me is kind of morose.
he lets the world trounce on him.
He was so depressive. You know, the Trib would keep him away from all the comics. Remember, he was always in the classifieds.
A standalone,
and,
yeah.
They'd want him his depression to infect other people, and they'd all... You know.
Funky Winkerbean, your thoughts?
See, that never did it for me either. I'm like Doonesbury.
Yeah.
I loved Bloom County.
Yeah,
Mr. Boffo. I became friends with Joe Martin.
Did you really? Yeah.
And I asked him. I went to his signing at Crocs and Bertano's years ago, and I said, most people can't do one strip. How can you do three?
Yeah.
He did Mr. Boffo, he did Willie and Ethel, and he did Porterfield.
And
we became friends. And he lives up in Lake Geneva, and I've been up to his house several times. He's a really nice guy and funny.
That's so cool.
All right. Are you finished talking comics?
Yeah, sorry. We're
finished for now. But honestly, if you ever have a weekend with nothing to do, call me because I'll talk comics with you all day
I'm
going to
send you my I've interviewed Charles Schulz since I'm a huge fan of cartooning even to this day.
Cool.
So, Pearls Before Swine, Only in the Sun-Times, all that. Yeah, it's...
All right. Well, let's talk about Out of the Wreck I Rise, a literary companion to recovery. When was this book written?
It was written... It took 5 years to write. It's really odd. I'm an alcoholic. I don't drink. Meetings really weren't giving me that emotional boost I needed. But what I really liked was quotes and philosophy and poetry and certain lines. You know, Virgil, tuna sidi malis, yield not to evil. But go forth all the more boldly to face it. That's kind of a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to someone, a writer I know named Sarah Bader in New York, and she's like a quote collector. And I was saying how I always thought I could explain recovery using quotes because people don't get it. Even the addicts don't get it. They think it's like this stupid thing they keep doing for stupid reasons. And while you actually have this explanation that these great writers over the eons have done, and so I thought I could write a book about this, but it seems like so much work. I don't really want to do it. And she said, I'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, really? And she goes, yeah. And so we wrote a letter of understanding, and I never met her. We spent 5 years writing it in Google Doc, and sort of we'd gather together all these quotes, and then I'd sort of sift them into this. It tells a narrative. That's what I'm most proud of. It's not just, you know, there's a lot of sort of inspirational homilies and things. Here's a quote, here's a quote, here's a quote, here's a quote. But these quotes are assembled in themes. There's a chapter on time. There's a chapter on relapse. There's a chapter on AA. There's a chapter on family, because family is very important in recovery. It's very hard to do it by yourself. And each quote sort of leads to the next. It sort of tells a little story, And there's also characters. Samuel Johnson is in it, and artist de Kooning's in it, and Jack Kerouac's in it, and different mm-hmm. people are enough that you sort of see what they're like, and you see a side of them that you're not used to. Like, I made sure to put in Hunter S. Thompson, mm-hmm. because people think of Hunter S. Thompson, oh, he's great, he's Gonzo, everyone loves right. him. But if you read the book, you like the quote I have is his girlfriend desperately trying to get him into recovery,
yeah.
but, you know, and how he kind of got himself out of it. And then you have Jan Wenner, the editor of Rolling Stone, saying, you know, he was an alcoholic. It ruined his health. It ruined his talent. You know, yeah. And you see this sort of side, like, oh, right, that's the part that we sort of ignore.
Yeah.
And a lot, I'm hearing from people all over the country. It's in its sixth printing. I mean, you know,
that's tremendous.
As a writer, you always sort of fantasize it's going to do well. And I yeah. remember my wife raising an eyebrow when I was kind of saying, oh, maybe this will be the one. And she said, you mean your book of poetry for alcoholics? And I go, oh, right. Nobody, this is, I'm writing a book for myself again, you know. But I hear from people all over the country. Again, it's recovery. I'm most proud of the time chapter because it's today and tomorrow and next week and next year. And you have to kind of keep yourself on track. Otherwise, this thing that you really, really love is going to come back and get you, as we see with like Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
There's a great quote from him where he says, addiction is that when you do the one thing you really, really most don't want to be doing.
Mm.
And, you know, here's a guy who struggled and it eventually took him. And so that little bit of advice, and I mean, it's not all highbrow. We quote Spider-Man 2. I was very proud of that. I mean, it took 2 years to get the permissions to quote all these. You know, you can't just take Spider-Man 2. You've got to contact Sony and pay them. And
right,
they,
of course.
You know, and
is
and
it
so,
with great power comes great responsibility or something else?
No. It's a wonderful Aunt May speech in Spider-Man, where she says, I think there's a little bit of hero in all of us.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And the last line is, even if it, it means giving up the thing you love. I mean, so that's the point of the book is really, and again, I didn't know if anyone would agree with me, is that recovery is heroic.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the path of the hero. You're doing this really hard thing that most people can't do. It's like climbing Mount Everest. And if I said I climb Mount Everest, I wouldn't have to add, and that's really hard.
Right.
You know, but if I said I gave up, you know, people say they're in recovery and they're proud of it. We're like, wait a second, aren't you ashamed? You know, people are always saying to me, you know, Neil, aren't you ashamed to talk about this? Aren't you embarrassed? I'm like, no, this is the hardest thing I ever did. This is, I'm most proud of this,
yeah.
You know? And so the book, there's a lot of imagery of mazes, a lot of climbing mountains, a lot of, I think Dante shows up, and not in the hell-like thing, but in Purgatorio, the second book, and it's in the AA chapter, because there's a little bit about having a sponsor, which is very important. You yeah. have this sort of pal who helps you. And so the scene you have is him and Virgil are going up Purgatory's mountain, and Dante's always crying and weeping and fainting and things. And he's like, master, stop, or I'm going to be left behind. And Virgil says, see that ridge over there? Shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Get up to the ridge and, you know, listen to me.
Right.
And he does, and then he turns around and realizes how far he's come. And that's having a sponsor.
Sure. Okay,
that's like sort of what it is. And so,
how many years sober are you?
What are years at now? 2017, 9 years.
You know what's so interesting about that? First of all, congratulations. Second of all, in AA, most people, when Wendy would ask that question, would know to the day.
Yeah.
But it took you some scrambling.
Right. Well, I mean, that's again. I don't put AA down.
It's, but that wasn't your path. Years,
but it wasn't my path. I didn't want to think about it all the time. I most of my day, I'm thinking about other things.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to have stuff that's sort of in your pocket that you can think, oh, I don't want to do this, or I, you know, some sort of image that helps you in difficult. I mean, I think of addiction as like a beast in the basement.
Yeah.
You've got it locked; it's there. But every once in a while, you go and you look at it, or you hear it creak against the door or something, you know. And so, again, I don't put people down. It's like church; you need to have life, have meaning, and you go to church every day and you take mass and all that. And I would never go, oh, that's a mistake. But for me, I found that these thoughts and these perspectives helped me stay sober, and I was very gratified. You know, the book's in its sixth printing. I'm going to be at Printer's Row tomorrow talking about it. Oh, excuse me, the Lit Fest.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we'll do all those details when we come back. Bottom line, so proud of you, Neil.
Why, thanks.
Yeah,
so
great.
Proud
thank
of you.
Bill, thank
so
you.
Good.
Quick break, 312-981-7200. Neil Steinberg is with us. The book, Out of the Wreck I Rise, A Literary Companion to Recovery. It's helped many people. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's 720 WGN. Printer's Row Lit Fest happens this weekend, and tomorrow there will be a panel hosted by Rick Hogan, and I believe the person he will be talking to is Neil Steinberg.
As well as Mike Lenahan, who wrote a great book called Much Ado about the American Players Theater up in Wisconsin, and Carrie Lynn.
That's right.
Well, I don't know what she wrote, but I'm sure, you know, so we're at
a
panel.
He mentioned that yesterday when
and we're talking about, I don't even know what it is. With Kogan, as you know, it'll be interesting.
Right.
I basically am going because he asked me to, and you can't say no to him because he's such a tremendous, it's like saying no to the city. He's Chicago itself.
You're right.
I was thinking walking over if I could give you my favorite Kogan line, and I just can't. I can't even allude to it.
Too many good ones?
Well, we were talking about Nelson Algren. We were sitting in the arts club, and if you've been to the arts club, it's like older people and professors in ties and things, and he goes, yeah, Nelson Algren, hey, anyway, we hated each other. I once called him a... And I said, well, what did you have against Nelson Algren? And he said, Nelson Algren wanted to blank my mother. And not to think blank, I'm doing for the radio, but I looked at him and I thought... I'm never in life. No one is ever. No one's going to say that sentence ever in the world.
Right.
How lucky I am to hear it. So I think tomorrow it's from 3:45 to 4:30, and we're going to be talking about. I think it's immersive writing.
Yeah.
Mike Lenihan sort of went up and joined the American Players Theater. You know, they did that Shakespeare up in Wisconsin and wrote a really lovely little book about the experience. And I guess I was immersed in recovery. I mean, when I did my recovery book, Drunkard, I had no desire to write about it. To me, it was like a romance. It was a genre, like a romance novel. But, you know, as a Dante fan, what does he teach you? If you find yourself in hell, take notes, right?
Yeah.
And so I was doing this thing, and I figured I might as well write about it.
Yeah.
And that, I think that really helped it work for me, because a lot of people sort of cross their arms and they refuse to...
But, Neil, somewhere in the back of your mind, as you're writing this, you say to yourself, I could potentially be helping... even one person or hundreds of people, you must be thinking that a little bit.
That's humbling, but I'm kind of, you know, it's hard for me to be humbled. You know, people write me letters and I always answer them, and I go out and I talk to people and I talk to groups. I'm going out to Valparaiso, Indiana in the end of the month, which is a long way away. But they ask and they've got 100 people gathered, and I can't say, nah, I'm too busy and important and you're in Indiana.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I mean, you have to help people, because I think it helps you see how difficult it is for them. I think you owe it because someone helped you.
Right.
I had all these people, starting with my wife, who helped me.
Yeah.
And it's ingratitude of the highest level. I mean, I really did this more for Kogan. But I also, I mean, I love the fact that people take strength from this. You know, I go on Amazon and there are all these people saying, this really helped me.
Yeah.
And I'm relieved creatively that it's not just me, that people aren't laughing at it. And I'm relieved, you know, I'm not a social service, but it feels really good to help people.
Good.
And it's so good when people come out and talk about their experiences, just like with mental illness too. We should talk about it.
Absolutely.
And get it out there so people can go, oh, wow, that sounds like me. I need help.
I've talked to the Kennedy Forum and their whole thing is mental illness, and alcoholism addiction is a mental illness. It is an obsession, and it is a pervasive mental illness that you always have. You cannot drink for a decade, and it's still there.
And was this part of your family background? Did you have this?
Oh, yeah, of course.
It was.
There was a beautiful scene that got cut out of Drunkard with my aunt, with an aunt of mine, and she has this big glass of vodka in her hand. I'd just given up drinking. We had my parents' 50th anniversary, and she takes a big suck of the drink. She goes, you know, I had a problem with drinking too. I would go out and walk the dog and fall over, but I got better.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help it. I said, gee, Aunt Blank, what happened? How'd you do it? She took a long pull and she went, willpower.
Yeah. Willpower. That's the secret.
You got to talk about it.
It's nothing, you know, no one chooses it. No one wakes up and says, a quote from William Burroughs in the book, no one wakes up in the morning and say, you know, no one wants to be a junkie.
Right.
You wake up in the morning and you're hooked. You think it's the greatest thing in the world. And I kind of, sometimes I almost feel like I'm betraying, like, this is earlier Neil, you know, with a martini shaker and all that. And I would have parties and things. And I see that guy's kind of looking at me going, what are you doing?
Right.
You know, and you just have to kind of keep that. You have to become a different person. And that's why, you know, I'm uncomfortable being the welcome wagon for all this, because, you know, if I relapse tomorrow, people go, aha, Steinberg, see, there you are. You're a fraud all along. And that's a huge possibility, and you have to be aware of that.
Are you afraid of that?
I almost expect it, which
Do
is
you?
Weird. It's like, it's not an afraid, like, oh my God, I'm afraid I'm going to have a drink. It's more like, yeah, I could see that.
Why do you expect it?
Because it's something that happens to almost everybody.
Yeah.
And one thing you learn in recovery is that things that are happening to everyone can happen to you. I think it's a danger. Okay, and part of me would like it. It's like, man, I could use that. You know, Milt Jackson, Modern Jazz Quartet, Japanese Rice Crackers, Jack on the Rocks.
Yeah.
That would be great. And then you have to go, no, then there's the next. I went to Japan for 2 weeks with my for a week with my brother to researching a story. And you think, well, I'm in Japan. This would be the place. I'm out in the countryside in some Suntory bar. And I thought, no, but then you have to be on the plane. And that, yeah. You know, you have to kind of – that's why you need to be able to have your wits about you, because you have to construct this sort of thing where you go, no, this is still a bad idea.
Right.
But the temptation is still there?
Oh, of course. You know, I mean, that temptation is the wrong word. We had a barbecue for my kids off to Los Angeles, and I'm loading the beer into the cooler, and I'm thinking, man, this would be good.
Sure.
But you just can't, because one leads to – I mean, if I thought I could drink a bottle of wine at lunch every day and that would be it, I'd be there. I'd pronounce – flutter my hands to heaven, pronounce myself cured, and maybe it goes away. I don't know. Supposedly, it never goes away. Mm. And I feel like it never goes away because – I can see how much I think about it.
Yeah.
And even not drinking for almost a decade, I think about it. Imagine, you know, if I had another drink, this is what I boil it down to. If I had another drink, I would want to drink even more than I do now, which is a lot.
Right.
Okay. So you kind of have to, the choice is to do it all the time and drink a fifth of Jack Daniels a day, which I've done, or not to drink anything at all. And I think that's, I'm very proud of this line, as I said, that when you give up your addiction, you're trading one thing, this one thing you adore, you're addicted to, for everything else in the world. And it's so addiction so skews your judgment that you're not sure that's a good deal.
But then it's everything else in the world versus this one thing.
So I get to do everything. I can ride divvy bikes. I brought a cigar. You ever saw my wife's like, you know, Neil, you shouldn't smoke that cigar. And I'm like, you know, honey, I've already given up one vice. Because I mean, I don't smoke them that often, but it's such a nice day like today. And so to me, there's a liberating thing to it where you go, you know what? I can have fun in other ways.
Sure.
And when you're still drinking, that's nuts. My sponsor, I remember him saying, well, you know, he was going back to things that he loved. And as a young person, you're like, what? I'm supposed to switch this for comic books?
And yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But then when you're actually in it, you're like, okay, I'm here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't have to stand in a bar. I'm not doing that. So I'm going to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
And reading is part of it. I loved reading these different poets and things that I brought into the book. I read Infinite Jest, which is this 1,100-page book by David Foster Wallace, mm-hmm. because it's in large part about AA.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled out the 4 or 5 pages of it that are the best. And so you don't have to go through the whole book. I already did. It's a great book. I recommend it. But reading it was a joyful thing for me.
Oh, good.
And you're a great writer. And we're so glad.
So nice of you to have me.
Continued success.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. Always enjoy being on your show.
That's Neil Steinberg, Printers Row Lit Fest.
Out of the Wreck, I Rise, a literary companion to recovery. If you'd like to see when Neil's going to be at the Printers Row Lit Fest, go to printersrowlitfest.org. Come see us again.
Anytime. Always fun.
Thanks so much, Neil.